Europe emerges the most divided in a new BBC poll, and we'll tell you the fashion brand scoring worst on transparency. This is the Marketplace Morning Report, live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. The French President Emmanuel Macron meets President Trump later today, and the meeting highlights the sharp disagreements on global policy, from trade to the environment to security with the Iran nuclear deal. Well, a new global poll commissioned by the BBC finds that Europe is the most divided region globally, followed by Latin America and then North America. Bobby Duffy is Managing Director of the Ipsos Mori Social Research Institute.
Spain, Sweden, Italy, Germany, Britain, that come out as the most increased sense of division. So those countries, three quarters of them, think their country is more divided than 10 years ago.
So very different countries. Spain, which has struggled economically. Sweden, one of the Scandinavian enlightened countries. What do people feel is dividing them?
Across the survey as a whole, across all 27 countries, around half of those countries pick out politics as the thing that divides people the most. The next most important thing to people is immigration and divisions between rich and poor, and then differences between religions. And you can see in Sweden, for example, big increase in concern over the last few years about immigration levels. And the same in Italy, the sense within continental Europe of immigration, and then related to that, concerns around religion.
Do hard economic times make us feel more divided, or are we really?
Oh, it's a really interesting question. These are people's perceptions. So we know, we can measure the fact that inequality, economic inequality, has increased. There's a greater polarization between rich and poor than we've had in modern times. So that's kind of the highest level we had. We know that people are more polarized in their consumption of media in terms of the filter bubbles and echo chambers are real things. People are filtering their worlds. But this is a perception. And we have a couple of biases that we're all subject to, which is we focus on the negative in the current, and we always edit out the bad things from the past. So we've always got this rosy retrospection, thinking things were better in the past than they are currently.
Let's look at the other side of the coin. 74% of Canadians said their society was very or fairly tolerant. And you had 65% of Chinese people agreeing. What's going on there?
It does raise these questions about what is a healthy level of tension or division within society. Do you want to have everyone agreeing with each other? Or is it okay to have this sense of difference?
Bobby Duffy, let's do the numbers. Global shares are mostly lower today, with the pan-European Stoxx 600 index seeing its biggest decline in a week. Simmering trade tensions between the U.S. and China are hitting health tech company Philips. Their CEO told Reuters he's worried about the effects of higher costs of commodities like aluminum and steel. It's 5 years this week since the deadliest garment factory collapse in history. More than 1,100 workers were killed in Rana Plaza in Bangladesh. Kerry Summers is founder of Fashion Revolution, which has a new transparency index out today. She says a number of brands, including Adidas and Reebok, have seen big improvements.
We're looking at what brands are publishing about their policies and their procedures, their governance, traceability. So are they publishing their factory lists, their processing facilities, their raw material suppliers? And then we also have spotlight issues every year. So this year we looked at women's empowerment, the gender pay gap.
But how do you know that what the brands are saying is what's actually happening on the ground? I've been to garment factories in India where, you know, brands may sometimes subcontract to other smaller factories and they may think they know what's going on. And then you speak to workers and you find out they're living in appalling conditions. They don't have contracts. They're still being exploited. There's a big gap between what's on paper and what's happening in reality.
Yes, there really is. I was in Bangladesh in November and I visited the tanneries, and they said that hardly any brands go to the tanneries. Most brands now in the last 5 years have a pretty good idea of their processing facilities. And we're finding that 37% of brands are publishing their first tier suppliers. So that's where their clothes are cut and sewn together. That's up from 12.5% 2 years ago. But only 18% are publishing a list of their processing facilities, like the tanneries, and only one brand, ASOS, is publishing its raw material suppliers.
Tell us what brands scored the worst.
We have brands like Dior, Max Mara, Daisy Gwell at the bottom. We had 12 brands who scored 0%.
Now, you started a hashtag, Who Made My Clothes, after Rana Plaza. Does it take a disaster of that sort to get people to care?
Before then, there was definitely, you know, a movement towards sustainable fashion and fair trade, but it was very fragmented. And I knew that we couldn't let a disaster of that scale take place to lose 1,138 garment workers without that leading to revolutionary change within the fashion industry. It's so opaque. And the fact that activists had to actually search through the rubble after the disaster to look for the labels to prove which brands were sourcing there, that was evidence of the lack of transparency within fashion supply chains.
Kerry Summers there. Finally today, YouTube is a teenager. 13 years ago, it published a 19-second clip of its co-founder describing elephants at the San Diego Zoo. The platform now has more than a billion users watching a billion hours of content every day. I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC.